When demoniac persons engage in animal killing, the demigods or devotees of the Lord are very much afflicted by this killing. Demoniac civilizations in this modern age maintain various types of slaughterhouses all over the world. Rascals, and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals, and at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. All these affairs are ghastly. And a compassionate person, namely a devotee of the Lord, becomes very unhappy to see such a sight. The hunting process is also carried on in a different way, as we have already explained. Hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicated, killing animals, and enjoying sex, all serve as the basis of modern civilization. Vaishnavas are unhappy to see such a situation in the world, and therefore they are very busy spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees are pained to see the hunting and killing of animals in the forest, the wholesale slaughter of animals in the slaughterhouses, and the exploitation of young girls in brothels that function under different names as clubs and societies. Be very much compassionate upon the killing of animals in sacrifice. The great sage Narada began his instructions to King Prachini Bahisha. In these instructions, Narada Muni explained that devotees like him are very much afflicted by all the killing that goes on in human society. Not only are sainted persons afflicted by this killing, but even God himself is afflicted, and therefore comes down in the incarnation of Lord Buddha. Jayadeva Swami therefore sings Sardara Hridaya Dashita Pasugaratam. Simply to stop the killing of animals, Lord Buddha compassionately appeared. Some rascals put forward the theory that an animal has no soul, or is something like dead stone. In this way, they rationalise that there is no sin in animal killing. Actually, animals are not dead stone, but the killers of animals are stone-hearted. Consequently, no reason or philosophy appeals to them. They continue keeping slaughterhouses and killing animals in the forest. The conclusion is that one who does not care for the instructions of sainted persons like Narada and his disciplic succession surely falls into the category of nashta prajna, and thus goes to hell. Let's see what the nashtra-prajna. The word prajna means perfect knowledge, and nashtra-prajna means one who has no perfect knowledge. One who does not have perfect knowledge has only mental speculation. By such mental speculation, one falls down and down into hellish, into a hellish condition of life.
Nashta-prajna, guna-pravaha-patito. Nashta-prajna, braja-yadaha. Let's see how this now. Okay. Om-ma-rana-dimirambasya Sadakaya Chakshuritam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurudeva
So, 3 points. Devotees are compassionate. A devotee is karuna atmanam, merciful. A soft-hearted person doesn't like to see others suffer. And so the devotees, being compassionate, being able to see things as they are, and understanding the consequences of action, for every action, there will be a reaction. And so therefore we have karma, vikarma, and akarma. And the devotee understands the principles of karma, of action. So karma generally denotes positive, you know, following the generally recommended course of action that's beneficial for everybody. This is karma. Vikarma means activities that will bring a negative reaction, a negative consequence, a suffering. Although even in good karma there is suffering, in reality. Which is why the devotees prefer to encourage akarma. Because with good deeds, bad deeds, they're still suffering because we're staying in the material world. And that means janam mrityu jara vyadhi, birth, death, old age, disease. So even good karma good karma is bad. Good karma has its negative points. It has its negative aspects. Which is why, you know, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna one has to tolerate the comings and goings of material existence. We shouldn't be worried too much about what's going to happen in the future. We know what's going to happen in the future. We're going to have some good times and we're going to have some bad times. Huh? Has anybody noticed anything different? And, you know, hoping that everything's going to be good is just flying in the face of reality. Right? It's stupid. Because even if things are good, there's always something going on. Right? This is, and Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, dukkha dosha anudashanam, that those who see with a proper vision, understand the faults of material existence very, very clearly. And so therefore, we should know, and certainly it's our experience, that there'll be good times, and there'll be bad times. And so one has to then tolerate that, because that's our ground. And so, you know, not too disturbed if there's something troubling or something, you know, there's a problem. And not too elated if everything is going fine. Because stick around. It'll change. It's the nature of material existence that it's always changing. But don't make it worse. Right? Don't make it worse. And so, you know, certainly the devotees encourage avoid vikarma, because that's just going to give you suffering. Right? And don't pin all of your hopes on, you know, pious activities or pious behavior. Because even in the reaping of the benefits of pious activities, there's still the inbuilt mechanism of material existence that will always be giving some pinch. So the devotees encourage akarma, activities that are positive in the sense that they're free from material reactions. In other words, they're activities that are performed on the spiritual platform. Sometimes difficult to discern the difference between them. Right? We saw, you know, Krishna's encouraged and bewildering the activities of the devotees. And sometimes Krishna, most of the time, Krishna's activities are bewildering because he's in the material world and engaging activities that looks like what everybody else is doing. Right? This is bewildering. How is it possible that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he's stuck in the material world like us? He's not stuck. And Prabhupada gives a very nice example. The example is the governor of the prison, right? Or the king, right? When the king enters the prison, he's not going in as a prisoner, right? He's going in as the king. In fact, he can pardon everybody if he wants. Just because he's going into the prison doesn't mean he's going there because he has to suffer some punishment. No, he actually has the power of going into the prison and telling everybody, okay, you're all now free. Right? Privileged position. So Krishna's like that. But Krishna's activities, because he appears just like an ordinary but human being on occasion. And the devotees also, they appear like ordinary human beings. They engage in activities that look, you know, like Prabhupada says, we live in a house. We cook in our house. We wash our, you know, we do all the activities. But because the focus of those activities is on pleasing Krishna and serving service to Krishna, then those actions are differentiated by the motivation of the devotee, by the motivations of the devotees, such that even though they look like the same activities of materialistic persons, they're not. They're not. The devotees acknowledge that everything belongs to Krishna. Right? Just like the bank teller in the bank. If the bank teller starts thinking that the money he's counting is his, and takes a bit home, how long is he going to have his job for? Right? Or that public servant in Western Australia. Right? They thought he'd stolen $2.5 million. They've just discovered it's $25 million. So, what's his fate going to be? Going to spend a fair bit of time in the penitentiary. So, and so this, you know, this is one of the reasons why the materialistic mentality is dangerous, because it sees
Mameti, I am mine. Aham Mameti, I am mine.
Whereas the vision of a transcendentalist is Aham Brahmasmi, I am spiritual by
nature. Everything ultimately belongs to God,
to Krishna.
And so therefore, with that understanding, now it's interesting, the devotee sees everything as belonging to Krishna, but at the same time, Krishna allots for each one of us a quota, right? So, you know, even though the devotees will see things as belonging to Krishna, at the same time, there's a sense of proprietorship for themselves also. Like Prabhupada would say, you know, everything belongs to Krishna, but if you try to take my wristwatch, I'll fight you for it. Because we're all allocated a certain, and some of us more than others, and some less. Right? But that portion or that quota is respected and acknowledged in societies. You know, ownership is appropriate. It's not inappropriate. But the mood of the devotee is, okay, this is mine, but at the same time, I understand where it has come from. And so, again, was it idam Krishna, idam nama? This belongs to Krishna, it's not mine. But actually, it is. You know, we shouldn't sometimes, you know, devotees think, oh yeah, everything belongs to Krishna, so I can just take it. Right? I can just take it. And people think like that, actually, in the temple, people think like that. We give away so much, so many things, and people think, oh, I can just take anything. The Hare Krishnas are just giving, so I can just take anything from the temple that I like. Huh? It happens at this time of year. The Chinchurupa cooks Christmas cakes. Huh? And then, you know, the devotee's strong around the kitchen. Oh, beauty! There's always a few just go missing. This is called stealing or pilfering. Huh? You can go to jail for that kind of thing. In fact, actually, you could be sent to Van Diemen's Land for doing so. So, you know, there is a limitation to seeing everything as belongs to Krishna. There is also individual personal responsibility for looking after things. Right? Why I like to see, you know, the rubber. See that? Got no rubber on the bottom. That scratches the marble. Put some marbles.
Been scratched many times, but still, what do you think? We should look after it. It belongs to Krishna. And so, only the best.
Yes, it's a poor substitute for the real thing.
Improvisation.
Yes, which is unfortunately the default in a country that's beloved to all of us. Right? And it's a mentality that we should break. Although Prabhupada was was pragmatic, but at the same time, you know, we should have the best for Krishna, not just some broken thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, one time while I'm around, Vipravuka Ben Swami visited Melbourne a long time ago, 20 years ago maybe. And we'd done up Prabhupada's room, we renovated Prabhupada's room, we renovated a number of rooms upstairs, but my office had, and I was trying to save money and kind of making it, I was a bit pronounced. But, and so, you know, there was
water damage from years before we replaced the slate roof on Prabhupada House, 1997, I think. We replaced the slate roof. It was over 100 years old at that stage. So anyway, the water damage, and there was wallpaper that was peeling off the wall. So he came to the office, and we were having a chat, and he looked around and he said, you know, you should fix this place up. Prabhupada wouldn't be happy. Wouldn't be happy if it looks like this. Wouldn't be happy. Prabhupada wanted us to present Krishna consciousness in a very, Prabhupada said, first dress, then address. Dress, and you see, Prabhupada was always neatly dressed. You don't see many pictures where Prabhupada's got a stubble. Right? You know what a stubble is? You don't see it. Prabhupada was shaved. Shave his head, shave his face. Pretty much every day. So it's presentation. You know, we might think, oh, that's material. Well, okay, maybe if the motivation is just for one's personal sense gratification or just to show off. But if it's done with the right motivation and it's done for presenting Krishna consciousness in a competent presentable. Yeah, so it should be neat, clean, tidy, and presentable. I'm making a problem at the point. If in relationship to the temple of the Vedic Planetarium, which is a huge project, Prabhupada made a point, you know, if there were headlines, you know, Bhaktivedanta Swami is chanting Hare Krishna under a tree in Mayapur, who's going to be interested? But if he builds a big, huge temple, right, even now, the Bhaktivedanta and a number of devotees in India are now negotiating with the government of West Bengal to build a 4-lane highway to Mayapur. Right? Mm-hmm. Because Prabhupada has put that huge temple there.
Yeah, what has it?
Oh, so many things. Yeah. Let's see what's practical. Let's have a road first. Yeah. We were promised a boat ride. They got a boat. But then, guess what? Took too long. Takes like 6 hours to get there by boat. And not necessarily safer either. So, anyway, you know, presentation almost is everything. So, out of compassion, learn to understand. We want to encourage people, give up the karma, give up the vikarma, engage in activities of akrama, of spiritual focus, of spiritual practice, of spiritual intent. So if we take the same kind of activities, but it's done with as an offering, patram pushpam palam priyam, the mood of a devotee is before they pursue some form of activity, then they make a prayer. My dear Lord, I'm doing this for you. Idam Krishna, Idam Nama. This is for Krishna, it's not for me. Right? And they try to do those, they do those things to the best of their ability. Not cut corners. Oh, this is, you know, rough enough is good enough. It's not. It indicates the wrong mentality. It indicates a cheating kind of mentality, actually. Right? When you think about it. We should be putting ourselves wholeheartedly into what we do and not cutting corners or, you know, leaving things broken around the place. And there's a good reason for that, because the devotees are karuna atmanam. They see the sufferings of others. They understand the consequences of all of the ugra karma. Right? They understand the consequences. Why they'll take from the materialistic persons and then offer it to Krishna? Because the benefit's there. Right? It's for their benefit. You know, sometimes the materialistic people misunderstand why the devotees are distributing books and asking for donations. They think, oh, they're just doing it for themselves. They just want my money. Yes, we do want your money, but it actually is for your benefit, not for my benefit. I'm not taking money for myself. I'm taking that money and I'm going to offer it to Krishna and use it for encouraging everybody, more people, to understand the importance of spiritual life and the dangers of material existence. Very dangerous. You can and looking for the sincere, you know, we avoid the demons, because as Prabhupada points out here, they can't understand these principles, but there are innocent people who do and can understand. That's what we're looking for. We're mining, or we're prospecting. Right? When you're prospecting and you're looking for gold, most of the time you come up with dirt. Right? Most of the time you come up with dirt. But every now and again, you come up with a nugget, a gold nugget, right? That's what we're looking for. And when we find such persons, then we encourage them. And go to great lengths and expend a lot of energy to do so. You know, sometimes the devotees will be doing sankirtan. And meet somebody and they say, you'll be a really good salesman. Right? You'll be a really good salesman. And what is generally can be, you know, because in those days we would, all we did was sell things. Right? It wasn't books, it was paintings, it was candles, it was t-shirts, sweatshirts, cookies, clocks, stickers. Key finder, yeah. Stupid stuff. But why? Why? Just because we wanted to make money. Not, well, yes, we wanted to make money, but we used that money printing books and then distributing those books. Buying temples, buying property, buying deities so that we could worship. So the devotees understand the importance of akarma, and you know, basically devotional bhakti, engagement in bhakti, and so being merciful and compassionate and seeing the precarious situation that people are putting themselves in, the devotees go out of their way to create an environment where they can take a book, or take some prasadam, or hear the holy name. Because gradually that will purify them. That is what's called agyata sukriti, very powerful. And over time, that constant hearing of the Maha Mantra, the honouring of prasadam, or the looking at Prabhupada's books, and you know, eventually one day actually reading And then thinking, oh, well, that's pretty far out, and then putting it down because I don't understand it.
That happened to me once.
I knew where all the Hare Krishna books were in my friends' houses. Because in those days, the devotees were basically distributing the Bhagavad Gita, which was a big book, very conspicuous. And the Nectar version was a fluorescent pink. And the Krishna book was a fluorescent blue, light blue. So, you know, they always stuck out. And I remember opening up one of my friends out, opening up the Nectar version and thinking, oh, yeah, let's have a look at this. And then it was a description about Krishna playing in the forest with his cowherd friends. So, whoa! These guys are this, you know, I had a very impersonal conception of who God was. And then here was a description, and I was thinking, how do these guys know what God looks like and what he does? So I thought, ooh, okay, I'll just close the book up and put it back in there. Wow, that's pretty far out. So, you know, I got the benefit later on. I read the book, couldn't understand it at all. I remember reading the Bhagavad Gita and just my head was swimming. I couldn't read a page. It was too hard, like Bhagavan Paramatma. Just all these Sanskrit words. And I was thinking, oh, my head hurts. You know, if you read something but you don't understand half a dozen words on the page, then it really, you've got to go back and look at it again and work out what's going on. You know, the first book that I read that really inspired me like anything was Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Because, well, one of the things was it wasn't a lot of Sanskrit terminology, because Prabhupada was just preaching to Ramatirtha, Bob Tomlin at the time, I think that was his name. And he was asking all sorts of questions about Christianity and Judaism and a whole range of questions appropriate for somebody coming from, you know, the Western culture, Prabhupada's responding. So that really made a lot of sense to me. Inspired me, actually. Then, of course, over years, after reading the Bhagavad Gita, you know, almost every day for a decade or so, I finally worked out what the Bhagavad Gita was all about. Well, didn't work it out, but at least to read it and understand everything on the page. So this agyata sukriti, somebody reads a few words and they get benefit. They get purified. They hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they hear about the fact that we all have a relationship with Him. We all have a relationship with God. And we can re-establish that relationship. So that's the akarma, or the activities that are free from material reactions. They only bring about more spiritual engagement, more spiritual activity, more enlightenment. So the devotee, and so Prabhupada says here, you know, Vaishnavas are unhappy to see hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicated, killing animals, enjoying sex as the basis of modern civilization. So the devotees are unhappy to see that, because they know that all just brings about suffering. You know, there may be some temporary illusion of enjoyment, some happiness that comes from that, but it's interesting. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that happiness is the enemy of the conditioned soul. Because he thinks he's having fun, but actually he's just creating more trouble for himself down the track. Right? So the devotee is unhappy to see that. paradukuduki.
They don't like to see the suffering of others. So therefore, they're very busy spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, which is what we're here. What are the devotees distributed? How many books this week? How many $1,000 worth of books? Anybody remember?
6,000 something.
Let's have a look. We have modern technology at our fingertips. Let's have a look here. Scores for Saturday. We'll see how hard the devotees have been working. There's a lot of books. Okay, let's have a look here. Nearly 1,000 books distributed this week. No, more. That was just yesterday. No. 3,500 books. That's hard work, because that means, you know, one person for each one of those books, plus 9 cents. Bhagavatams. So that's Manakshi. So 15, where's Manakshi here? And she's taking kids home. $1,500 worth of books. Ojasvi, 1,400. So hard work. Huh? People don't just come up to you and say, "Oh, I've been looking for that book. Where can I get it? Can you give me one?" People don't. They don't. So, it's austerity. It's austerity. It's interesting, isn't it? Today is the day that Krishna recited the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Mokshada, Ekadasi. But it's interesting that Prabhupada didn't really make much of a thing about the rest of the Bhagavad Gita being recited on this day. Prabhupada made a big thing about distributing the Bhagavad Gita every day. This Prabhupada's focus on the Bhagavad Gita, not just sitting down, you know, Sri Bhagavan, Vaja, I mean, Chanaway, and we think, "Oh, I'm doing really good, I'm chanting the Bhagavad Gita." Not bad. I don't suggest we don't do that. But Prabhupada's focus was, put the Bhagavad Gita, get it as ready as you can, put them in a bag, go out on the street, and give it to others. This is, yes, you should read Bhagavad Gita every day, but then if you read the Bhagavad Gita every day, you understand the importance of the Bhagavad Gita, so you should now go and give it to others. You know? That's what we should be doing. We should be giving the Bhagavad Gita and finding all of those people who've never heard of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, it's easy to distribute Bhagavad Gita to people who know the Bhagavad Gita. That's not what Prabhupada wanted either, when you think about it. He wanted the Bhagavad Gita to be given to people who didn't know about the Bhagavad Gita. That's real mercy. Huh? You know where the best place is to distribute books? The devotees tell me. You know where it is? Huh? Car park. What? Where? When they say the best place is to distribute books? Does anybody know?
Karen Kaku.
Google got woken up.
Where's the best place to distribute books? There's no book distributed here, they've all gone out. The Hare Krishna temple is the best place to distribute books. It's the easiest place to distribute books. Well, go on. Of course it is. But really, we should be going out and giving the Bhagavad Gita to the people who don't know about the Bhagavad Gita. That's why Prabhupada translated the Bhagavad Gita. He left India. Why did Prabhupada leave India? Why did he do that? Actually, it was hard to preach to the Indians. He decided, ooh, these people aren't interested in spiritual life, they're just chasing the West. I'm going West. Well, that's what he did. So, the best place to distribute the Bhagavad Gita may not be the easiest place to distribute the Bhagavad Gita. What do you think about it? It'll be the hardest place. But of course, we want to cut corners. Right? We think, okay, I'll cut a bit of a corner here and it'll be, I'll get the job done. We'll have distributed books. But in one sense, just hanging around the temple and distributing books to all the pious people that come to the temple, that's not really what Prabhupada had in mind. Not that we shouldn't do it, and not that we shouldn't recite Bhagavad Gita. I'm not suggesting that we don't on this particular day, because a lot of people come, you know, they're pious. They're pious people. But we want to get to the impious people when we think about it. Not go to the place where it's the easiest, but go to places where people really need it. And so Prabhupada says here, the Vaishnavas are unhappy to see the hunting women, drinking liquor. Right? Drinking liquor so much that the young men and the young women don't know what they're doing. The young man thinks that the young woman is giving permission, but she's so drunk she doesn't even know what she's doing. And he's drunk and so focused on what he wants, he ignores everything else. And then what happens? Gets picked up by the police and shunted off the court. And ends up ruining their lives. They end up ruining their lives. It's very common. Very common in Western, or here, Prabhupada says, modern civilization. People getting so intoxicated they don't know what they're doing. It's called a blackout state. One gentleman, the people who research, well, for obvious reasons, there are people who research these things. One gentleman woke up and found himself in a hotel room, and his clothes were all neatly hanging in the wardrobe, he woke up and he felt a bit hungover, and he couldn't work out how he got there. Didn't know how he got there. And as it turned out, he had, this was like on the weekend. He started drinking on the Tuesday. he had gone into the, what they call a blackout state, and then had gone, bought a plane ticket, flown to another city, went to the hotel, put his booked in, and the receptionist said, oh, he's a little bit drunk. So, due to intoxication, people go into this blackout state. In fact, most people are in the blackout state because they've forgotten Krishna. They've completely forgotten who they are.
And just like this young man, you know, he had slept in a hotel room for 2 days. So how much had he drunk? This is quite phenomenal. So most people that we meet, many people that we meet, they're in the blackout state of forgetting Krishna. And we need to wake them up. You know, what did Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Wake up, sleeping souls. And this is one of the reasons why we put so much effort into book distribution. And why that book distribution should be to everybody. Lord Chaitanya encouraged the preaching to everyone, regardless of caste, of gender, of social position, of wealth. Everybody should be given an opportunity because they're all spirit souls. Yes, and in this way become a guru. In this way become a guru. So, this is our business, actually. So, yes, people have fallen. I don't think we need to emphasize that too much because we know that. But what is required is, you know, this. The mentality of doing everything for Krishna and doing it the best we possibly can. You know, I remember I used to do the kitchen growing up. And it used to cause me a lot of anxiety because I wanted it to be clean. But it took a long time. And the brothers like Prabhu could go into the kitchen and they clean it within 2 hours. And it would always take me 3 hours, sometimes four. The first time I did the kitchen clean up was I left the kitchen after midnight. In tears. By the way. It was the day I got, the day I was shaved out, the first day. I lost everything. Everything had been taken away from me. My girlfriend, my car, the house that I lived in, everything was gone. And there I was, after 4 hours in the kitchen, just in tears, because it took me so long to do the job. But one of the reasons why it took me so long was because I wanted to make sure that it was properly clean. I'd see other devotees would do it, and they'd skip things, or they, you know, they cut corners, but I always felt, I shouldn't say this, I suppose, but I think it's what we should have, that mentality that whatever we do, whatever service we offer, it should be done, you know, to the highest standards. The temple should be kept to the highest standards of cleanliness and punctuality and presentation. And that requires work. It requires effort. It doesn't happen by itself. But if we do our service to the best of our capacity, to the best standards, to the best of our ability, Krishna will see that. And he'll reciprocate. He'll reciprocate with us. And give us deep insights into what it means to be a devotee and what it means to be compassionate to others. That's the because it's sacrifice. What we do is jagya. Even if it's just sweeping the courtyard or chanting our rounds. Actually, it's Harinama, 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 Ilkevaram. Kalo nasdeva, 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 kati anjita. It's the only way. Right, chanting Hare Krishna, but all of it is a sacrifice. And if we sacrifice to our utmost, then Krishna reciprocates with us. Right? And when you give to him, he gives back. And gives back in many ways. Many, So, you know, when we're doing our services, when we're preaching, we should not try to cut corners. We should appreciate the benefits, the real benefits of putting the extra effort into doing things in such a way so that the offering is always of the highest quality, you know, of cleanliness, of punctuality, of, you know, if you're cooking an offering for Krishna, that it's when you look at it, you want to eat it, right? Not that you shouldn't eat it, because you've offered it, obviously, but it should look good, right? It should be done to the best of our capacity, so it looks, it's like, whoa, that looks good. That's why we put the cover on it. That's why we put the cover on the offering. Because there will be people who go, whoa, that looks good. But we do it for Krishna's pleasure, not for our pleasure. You know, what sometimes happens is the cook cooks and then keeps it for himself. But that means there's some ulterior motive. I'm either keeping it for somebody else or I'm keeping it for myself. Wrong. No, it should be cooked and just given to Krishna and then distribute it to others. That's the best offering. Because that's free from personal motivation. Or cooking for somebody else. Oh, Bert, can you cook, you know, something for me on the 7 o'clock? That's wrong, actually. You know, the proper mentality is, idam Krishnaya, idam namama. I'm not doing it for anybody other than Krishna. And then I'll just distribute it freely to everyone. That's the best kind of offering. Right? Not that I'm keeping it for my husband. Although sometimes when it's interested in the cooks, I think, okay, I wonder if Jitra will keep a bit for me. But I shouldn't. Huh? I shouldn't. Should you think, okay, that's for Krishna. Let it go. It's all his anyway. And Prabhupada says, you've got two hands, he's got 10 arms. What are you going to hold on to? But then if you do that, the corolla, you know, what? When you're surrounded in Krishna, you've only got two hands, he's got 10 arms. What he gives you, you won't be able to hold. So we should, you know, we should, as a community, we need to avoid the shortcut mentality. Right? It's predominant in India. Right? Everything's a shortcut. That's why you're driving down the highway and then all of a sudden you see a huge big bus driving towards you. You idiot! This is the left hand side of the road and you're not on you're on the wrong side of the road. Right? But it's okay, it's a shortcut. Huh? It's a shortcut. And you know, I don't think Indians have a monopoly on this mentality. But it's certainly prevalent. It's very common. So we should be careful. We're predominantly, you know, our ethnicity in Melbourne is influenced. We're influenced by these things culturally. So we need to, it's something we need to get rid of. We're not in a poor country. And it's not like we don't have facility. We've got facility. And we're not poor. Anybody here poor? How many people here live in Albert Park? Please raise your hands. Yeah, well, you're not poor people. St. Kilda East or West? But we're not poor people. So that's why we should be offering the best to Krishna. Even if we're poor people and we're living in Albert Park, we're pretty well off. As poor people, right? We live near the temple and we get fed sumptuously every day. We feast like a king. Anyway,
do some thoughts. Some thoughts on preaching and serving Krishna. We're busy preaching. And you know, it doesn't mean that we all have to go out on distribution. Just looking after our families is preaching. Going to work is also preaching. And being a stable community of devotees is also setting an example. Right? And Prabhupada wanted that. We should understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We should also understand how that's applied. And so generosity and equanimity and being available or merciful to everybody is a symptom of that culture. Right? It is a symptom of that culture. Giving. And the devotees actually like to give. You know, like Korma, you know. Korma loved to cook. Right? And always to the best standard. Right? Always to the best, you know. Korma would, if we were cutting up potatoes, then Korma would cut up a potato. And then he would put the size of each individual, he'd put it on the windowsill. So that's what you've got to, that's how you've got to cut it. And of course, you know, with the brahmacharis, we're all just cutting those as big as possible because it's quicker. And God would say, nah, wrong. Right? And he'd get on your case. What are you doing, you idiot? Cut it properly. Huh? In those days, we were only cooking for 150 people. You know, we didn't have a ditto. Nowadays, we've got a ditto and we just choose the colour. It does it for us. We don't have that problem anymore. Except when we go to go-karts. Have you seen, you know, in that salad, sometimes you get those big bits of broccoli? It's like a baseball plant. This is corner cutting. Right? So, you know, corner wanted to hear, but he was, you know what they used to do? They knew that the young brahmacharis, me at that time, would be not very good servants of the Sunday feast guests until we had something to eat. Right? So what they used to do was, we were allowed to eat first. Because then if we'd eaten first, we'd be peaceful and relaxed, and we would treat the guests nicely. But if we hadn't eaten first, what do you want? You know, used to stand at the front gate and tell people, we're not having a Sunday feast today. You can go home. He would tell people, you can't come. Didn't want too many people coming. But Korma's mood was, and he got great satisfaction out of cooking these wonderful feasts. You know, I remember one time we did stuffed puris, and so we were cooking the puri so they puffed up, then you break the top and you put in the sour cream mix and vegetables on the top. So that was fantastic. And we only had 150 people coming, but you know, that probably took us 3 hours to make that prep for 150 people. Because you know, they were going to eat 2 or 3 each. The brahmacharis ate 4 each. So, but, you know, there's just such a deep satisfaction you experience by cooking a feast, cooking the best you can, and then just giving it to others, and then seeing them so happy and satisfied, taking Krishna prasadam. So, yes, high standards with a proper motive. Please, to satisfy Krishna and satisfy the devotees. the devotees who have forgotten that they're devotees, the people in the blackout mode, they're demons. What is this? Hunting women, drinking liquor, intoxicated, killing animals, enjoying sex. This is the basis of modern civilization, but we happily give them the show, give them books. And, you know, for many people, just chant Hare Krishna because they can't read the books and they won't take the prasadam from a devotee. So what do? We just go and literally give them the holy name. And gradually, over time, that the presence of the Lord is deeply felt. So that gradually purifies everybody. And that's the mercy of the devotees. And here, karuna atmanam, persons who are very merciful. That's what we should be, very merciful. Does anybody have any comments or questions? It's going to be different for everyone, right? Do you have a job? Have you got a family? Have you got any time left? Huh? And then, you know, because you've got to work, and you've also got to look after your family. So, how much time have you got left after that?
We have to take our time, right? So, how we should serve Krishna should decide how should we plan the time.
But I just answered that question. How much time have you got left after going to work and looking after the family?
Maybe 2 to 3 hours on weekdays. And we can, like, 5 hours each.
Okay, you've got 2 hours to chant the japa.
Right.
Taking
hours.
That's also, you've already done that.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not doing too bad if you've got 2 to 3 hours. Half of it. You need some time for yourself. Right? You need time for yourself. Because if you're always giving, you'll get fried. Right? You'll have a mental breakdown or whatever. So, try half. See how you go. And if you've got more time and you've covered everything else, and do more. It's going to be an individual, it's going to be a calculation for the individual to make, and it'll be different for everybody. Huh? So, and be practical. What are you good at? Here's another question. Do you know what you're good at?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. At your age, I'm guessing what your age might be, you should know. If you don't know, then maybe you're a no-hoper. So, okay. What are you good at? What do you like to do? Do that for Krishna, I would think. And even sometimes what we're good at, we actually don't like doing. But do that for Krishna also. And, yeah. What are you good at?
the sloka and the sharing the realization in different lectures, so I try to discuss with.
But what about in terms of occupational activities? What are you good at?
I'm the computer engineer, so.
What kind of engineer?
I'm more about the database and.
You're a software engineer. Yeah. I could probably find something for you to do. Have a chat with Chris. Yeah. You know, my previous work before I became a devotee was as a bricklayer. I was working on building sites. So the devotees asked me, what do you do? And I hated it. I didn't like doing it at all. It was probably why I'm not doing it now. But I said, what did you do? I said, I was a bricklayer. I said, oh, great. We've got some bricks that we want you to lay. I think, like, oh, no. I joined the Hare Krishna movement to get away from this stuff. Now they just got me back doing what I was doing before. But of course, it's the mood. It's doing it for Krishna. Is whatever we do. And certainly the things that we're good at, because we'll be satisfied with doing that. And the things that we like to do, good to do that for Krishna. Anything else? Anybody else have a comment or a question? Or are you worried about whether there's going to be anything left for breakfast? Okay. Rambarajanambhavutam. Jaya. 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 Jaya.